Turuntuset tulee Joonael.
Our main topic today is going to be about tailored employer branding. To introduce the topic, I would like to say that the unemployment rate decreases rapidly, at least here in Estonia, and young generation is more global in the work practices, it means that employer branding is getting higher priorities at the top management strategic development list. And most of the organizations already have understood that employer branding does not mean only copying competitors. And they have also understood that that one solution doesn't fit all. So my first question, Daiga, for you is that where is the starting point for employer branding in an organization?
Well, I think honestly that we should ask that question, where is the starting point for the business? Because it is quite common actually that when we talk about marketing practices or strategies or human resource strategies or employer branding strategies, that companies do not realize that actually you have to first understand the question why you are in the business. You have to be very clear about the strategy of the business enterprise, and only then you can think about how to build your marketing, how to build your brand, how to build your employer brand, and so on and so forth, because you need to build on something on a solid base, so to say. Otherwise, it's like building on a sand. You do not really know where and how. So first thing to understand would be the reason why you are in a business, what you are doing here.
Absolutely.
And from that point onwards, you can think about purposeful, meaningful strategies.
But what is the starting point? What analysis would you suggest to do at the beginning? Let's say that there is a company existing already, maybe for, I don't know, 10 years, something. And now they think that it's difficult to get new employees. Our old employees are leaving for some purpose. Where should an organization start analyzing the situation?
Yeah, the organization should, in the first place, to understand how, in what ways, it wants to achieve its goals. Because the business goals come first, and then you realize or you think about what kind of people do you need to make those goals happen, and how those people should behave. What would be the defining values of the working environment where those people would work? And what kind of people do we want working for us? Then we think about if we are clear about those people profiles, like in general terms, then we would think where we can find such people. Where would they be currently? In what type of kind of organizations, right? Whether they are in schools or somewhere else. And what those people would value, actually. And then from there, you get a thinking point, how should I frame my employer branding message so that these type of people would hear me, and which channels I use for this message to spread, that they would hear me, and that they would believe that we are really a desirable working place for them.
So these are the steps that every organization, despite is the organization in the public sector or in the private sector, should take a look at the beginning.
I think it holds true for any industry, for any size of the organization, even I would dare to say.
Tell me, how important is to look at the competitors, what they are doing?
Well, I think that we certainly need to know our competitors, and then we need to know what are some of the great things they are doing, and also maybe learning something from them, because why to reinvent the bicycle, right? If we can just borrow good ideas. But then we also we need to realize in what ways do we want to be different from our competitors. And in what ways we want to be unique. It's the same like in the business. We need to offer something else, right? Not what everyone else is offering. And organizational culture and values, this is something that cannot be really copied. And in many cases, this is something the only thing that cannot be copied these days, right? And even, for example, even if good customer service would be probably a value for most organizations, or if not for all organizations being in service business, for example, then still the way how it is executed in each company is quite different, right? And if we talk about employer branding and about the internal environment in the company, how we want to build our processes, then we can copy the process itself. Now, for example, fruit baskets in the kitchen. Yeah, this is kind of a trendy thing nowadays. Many companies are doing this, building like very healthy practices at workplace. Everybody can do it. But still, the way how people would interact within the company, what would be the relationship, this is different. This you cannot copy.
Absolutely. Tell me, you work for two organizations that are different. One is an airline company, the other one is, let's say, the loyalty company,
yeah,
or I don't even know how to categorize them. How are these companies different?
First of all, the business model is different, and also there would be perhaps some categories of employees where we would be looking at similar profiles, but mostly we have different target audiences, and that obviously defines that we also speak differently to those people, and where we might be a little bit more traditional in case of AirBaltic. As an airline, and where we have very, very concrete target audiences, and in terms of our pilot candidates, in terms of our cabin crew candidates, in terms of airline-specific professions or functions, and then we have entirely different target audience with loyalty our loyalty marketing company. We are searching for data-driven people, for digital people in our marketing practices, for very, very commercially capable and brilliant people. And and that helps understanding what are the differences, what is the ideal profile of our employees. That, to high extent, defines how we speak to those target audiences, how we frame our message, what are the activities, what we do.
But are the values also different? The values that you have in the kind of the older company, the AirBaltic, and the values that you have in the data-driven loyalty company?
The smaller company, this loyalty company, is a younger one, and it has had an opportunity to build its culture from the very scratch a few years ago with a very, very small defining team and then growing it up. And so we have had an opportunity to define those values from the very beginning and then to grow the team around those and use this value set as a selection tool to hire every new colleague against this value set, so to say. And that has helped us to build a very precisely fitted environment where we are looking for people who are actually embedding those values into their personalities to a pretty high extent. And that makes internal environment much more specific and in a way targeted towards the concrete company culture. Where in AirBaltic, we have a bit more conservative organization. So we have a value framework which has been established for a while, since the beginning of the organization. It's like 20 years ago, but the company is large, and not on every occasion you can actually manage to hire against those values, no matter how much you wish, because there's certain skill set which you still have to be able to provide. And if you have a kind of a choice between the behavior or the personal values and the skill set that you need, ideally, you would go for the attitude, right? But in the real world, when there is minimum skill set, you still have to make those trade-offs sometimes. And in a large organization, that is a little bit of a challenge to hire people strictly by the values, strictly by the attitudes. And that then this environment is a little bit less specifically defined as it is when you have this opportunity to hire very, very targeted way against values by the attitudes, fitting the culture.
Does it mean that in the larger and older organizations, it's difficult to keep the focused culture? Because I do believe that when the airBaltic started, I don't know when it was, then the culture was also kind of more targeted. And when the organization grows, it's difficult to keep the focus. Am I right, or do you see it differently?
It is much more difficult. Absolutely, I agree. I don't know how the culture was at the very beginning, because I'm working for 5 years for the company now, and then the company itself is 20 years old, and it has been growing, and it has been going through different stages, including difficult ones, including restructuring, downsizing, then growing again, and so on and so forth. And it all has left its footprints in the history of the company and also into the organizational culture of the company. And in our case, I would say that the industry itself and then the industry spirit itself is defining the internal culture to a bit higher extent than like specific or unique values, which are probably not so unique in a Baltic case. Yeah, we have safety is the first value, which is understandable for the airline business, right? Then punctuality, customer service. So those are the things which are quite generic. Those wouldn't be like very much unique for specific organization. And the more generic are your values, the more generic the culture becomes. See, that's the thing.
Very, very intriguing. And I think it's very challenging for leaders of the company. When the company grows, how to still keep the focus, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And with leaders changing, the culture changes as well, you see. That's the interesting point. I have often been asked that question, that is it really true? Isn't the culture something that gets built from the bottom, from the people inside the organization? Yes and no. To a large extent, yes, people define the culture, but much more or much stronger culture is influenced by the top management of the company.
Absolutely.
And if that changes, then also the culture changes in a way.
Absolutely, I 100% agree with you. But then my next question, okay, the organizations are different, the values are different, the cultures are different. But if you look at the talent market, let's say that these are the, if you try to define the talent, let's say that these are the best graduates of the whatever business school or technology school or whatever schools you have. And usually there is a very, very tough competition to get these people to work for you as a first employer after the university, and then to develop the career with you. But how do you see the talent market? Do you see it with different eyes when you work with the different companies or for the different companies, or do you still see that these are the best, the first hires, and then a bit lower and lower, and then the ordinary people?
In a first place, I do not believe much in this statement of best people, because there is no such thing as generally best people for any company.
Okay.
I think, we should proceed from our specific needs point of view. If we understand well what are the skills, the competencies, the knowledge we need in our business, that the specific behaviors or even personality profiles which come afterwards, into selection process. But we I would start with those experiences, skills, competencies, knowledge. So where are those people? Where those can be found? And in which schools, in which maybe, I don't know, competitors, for example, that's the question. Do you hire from competitors? And only company itself can answer that question. There is no right or wrong answer. Is it good or bad? Are these specific industries where those people would be found, locally only or also abroad? Or there are a specific set of the countries where you can find those people? So all those questions are important into this play to understand whom do we need, and then we also can kind of think how to reach those people. Yeah, and for example, in our case, in Air Baltic's case, there would be people who would come. If we talk about schools, we have pretty clearly defined which are the target universities and with whom do we cooperate. Yeah, so there is a schools who would produce our mechanics and engineers for maintenance works. Also address Stockholm School of Economics, for example, Riga Business School, because in the commercial functions and in revenue management and in some other functions, we would need that profile of people. And then would be some of the schools which provide technologically advanced people, so for our IT department. So we would know with whom do we cooperate to build that relationship, and where we take people for internships already, and then we observe them, and then we take the best ones after they finish to work for us, and so on and so forth. And in the same way, and much more narrow is the target audience in terms of schools for coalition rewards. Yeah, there basically we would build that relationship only with Stockholm School of Economics and with Riga Business School, because the rest are less relevant. And then we more look abroad to people who are studying in different universities beyond the borders of Latvia.
So you really segment the talent market looking it with the different eyes, but when you compare the two organizations you are in charge for the human resources management, then you're told that one is kind of the older organization and the other one is a newer and smaller, but how do you use any method how to position the organizations compared to the competitors when you are looking at the talent market, let's say, because you already mentioned the Stockholm School of Economics and Riga Business School twice. I do assume that there are several companies, everyone trying to get the best graduates from these schools.
Sure, that's true. You see, in case of coalition rewards, we have that luxury of having no direct competitors in Latvia, for example, and our main offices in Latvia, and we are recruiting most people here. So what we can offer in that case is unique experience for people who want to advance and grow within loyalty marketing industry, because there is no other coalition loyalty company or provider in Latvia, and this is that's the message, and then that's the benefit what we can offer for people who are interested to look more into that direction, and we can offer insights into the global loyalty marketing industry through the connections that we have built within this company. And that is pretty unique and pretty interesting, and people would choose to work for the company because of that. And the company has numerous awards, even being that young as 5 years approximately in the marketplace, it has managed to achieve a lot of recognition abroad. And that is something that attracts the audience.
But Taiga, tell me, in Estonia, you have some competitors, as Lioness, isn't it?
Not exactly. We have looked at the Baltic market, and we say that the company that would be built according to those principles, coalition rewards and PIMS program is applying, but there is not really anyone else.
Okay, so what you say is that you have so unique business model that no one has in the world. So that's why you can provide totally unique experiences of working as well.
Not in the world. In the world, there are many successful companies, like Nectar, for example, like a few others in USA, especially in Canada and in other countries. Payback in Germany, for example, would also act according to the same model, but not in the Baltic countries. Here we are still in a very strong positions. And the truth is also that company is not, the headquarters are in Baltics, but at the same time, the business is reaching outside of Baltic countries. So we have offices in Finland, and in Finland the program is very successful. It has many more members into the program, into the PIMS program, than for example, we have in Baltic states and in Russia. And then there are new plans for other countries as well in the future. So it is interesting for young and ambitious people who are interested about loyalty marketing. So.
Okay, but let's go to a Baltic, an airline. It's not a unique business model. How do you position your employer brand compared to the other airlines?
In case of airline business, you're right, it's much more difficult because we are not so unique. Well, we are in Baltic countries. Yeah, here we are pretty strong. And for the people who would like to build their careers still back home in Baltics, so we are pretty much only one choice, yeah, so maybe a few others, but we are the biggest and then the most serious one. But as we are competing also in external markets for the workforce, because with the fact that we are the biggest and almost the only one in Baltics, comes also the downside that if we need aviation-specific professionals to hire, then the only place is ourselves, or if that person is not with us, then probably this person has worked in the past with us, right? And then not much elsewhere. So we have to go beyond the countries, beyond our country, and look outside as well. And then there is this question: yeah, how do we position ourselves, and what can we offer more than the big ones? Because outside of Latvia, then we are very small. We are big in Latvia, but we are small if we compare ourselves to the traditional carriers. And then I think we pretty much win those people who are looking for the dynamic, fast developing, very agile, innovative workplace, and so on and so forth. So these are the things that we can offer at Air Baltic. Being small next to the big competitors offers one nice benefit. So we can implement different ideas much faster, much easier. We can try, test ideas. If it doesn't work, we can come back, you know, and then try again with different idea. So that is something that you not always can do with very large and very conservative organizations. So it is all relative. You see, if I compare Coalition Awards with Air Baltic, then Air Baltic comes across as more conservative one. But when I compare Air Baltic with the other airlines in Europe, then we are suddenly least conservative. So.
Yeah, it's kind of matter of comparison.
Exactly. It's all in comparison, you see.
So you have very much of the kind of the startup thinking in Air Baltics, as I understand. Come, test, try, but be aware of the security.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Very good. I think it was a very good example about the positioning. And how to use it in employer branding. If I now go a step further and ask about the kind of the employer branding toolbox and channels and messages, now when we know that how you are positioned, so what are the differences there? What tools do you use in Air Baltic? Do you use the same tools in Coalition Rewards, or are they different? And if yes, in what means?
Then we should understand what could be the tools in general. And I think that those employer branding tools are actually it's everything what the company does. Yeah, it's starting from the product and service, what we have, and then the customer experience that we offer, and goes to the internal processes, how those are built, and then our people. Because people is one very important tool for employer branding, I would say. And actually, anybody in the company. It starts, of course, with the top management, with CEO of the company, and with the management team. But then it goes, down to the every line employee. And then, what do you do? Do you just let those people to... talk whatever they think they should talk about the workplace, or you somehow prepare them, or you give them certain ready-made messages in a way that are helpful for spreading around. And if you are a company that thinks about your employer branding in a targeted way, then you probably have also those template kind of messages so that you build it into your own people's minds, how you speak about your company, how you behave externally. Yeah, what are the things okay to support your company as an employer outside, and then what are perhaps the things that you should rather solve internally than go externally and talk about those. But I think. General image of the company, product or service marketing, all of our people, how people also in terms of how successfully they build their personal brands. Yeah, because we influence our company brand pretty much by whatever we do outside. Are we participating in any professional activities outside of the company? Are we, blogging? How do we behave in our social networks? Now with the Facebook, with LinkedIn, with Twitter, and then many more. What do we do there? It cannot be separated. We are not separate from our companies. It is all very, very much connected. And for example, even now I'm talking to you, I'm influencing my personal brand.
You are.
To a higher extent, I influence both their Baltics and Coalition Rewards employer brands, because I'm representing these companies and I'm talking about them publicly. So these are actually the tools, and the company should think about how these tools are used then in a way that supports the brand that we want to build. Also, corporate social responsibility activities, yeah? any media publicity that we are getting as a company, and so on and so forth.
Very good. I think that there are a lot of good ideas that that people can really learn from you. And I wanted to ask also about the measurement. Are you measuring the results of employer brand differently in your organizations, or is this part the same and unified, or should it be?
Well, I think the company, it probably can be different if a company defines very specifically what are the reasons or the purposes it wants to use these measurements for. And if you want to use them for certain marketing purposes or something like that, you maybe use, something like those Net Promoter Scores and things like that in measurement. But to me, the only meaningful measurement as for a practitioner is whether I'm getting enough of the right people applying for the jobs that we advertise, and maybe even when we do not advertise, how many are those unsolicited applicants who are just showing their wish to work for the company. How many I'm getting, for example, from LinkedIn, I get quite frequently inquiries and applications, both for the jobs, for internships from abroad, then I know that our employer brand is working pretty well. And just as an example, I can mention that a bit more like a year and a half ago in Finland, we launched our PIMS brand, PIMS program. There was this huge rebranding exercise. We suddenly started to get so many applications and CVs, even without advertising any vacancy, because we didn't have at that time, all the vacancies were filled and we were not searching for anybody. But we got a lot of applicants being interested into this company and into this program, joining this company. So this is the measurement that you are having a good employer brand. And if we would be, again, example, if we would be going into a market where nobody knows about us, I know that I have to use a recruitment agency to help us to reach the audience, right? But if I am AirBaltic in Latvia, for example, I don't need an agency. I can post that, and I am sure that there will be enough of applications because our name of the company speaks for itself, and then there would be certainly a sufficient number of people who are willing to join the company. So this is the measurement, the most meaningful one.
Taiga, let's set a benchmark now here for other companies. Can you tell me roughly the amount of, let's say, CVs you receive without advertising or any campaigns? Is it some per day? Is it 10 or more per day? Or is it, I don't know, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s or hundreds per day? Let's count working days only. Where is your level?
We are not Google. We are not Gatekeeping.
Yeah, I understand you're not Google. But still, you are a very good company. And I think that it would be very, let's say, challenging for others to benchmark you.
Yeah. Well, I would say that we are getting few every day.
Okay.
Between, and again, depending on how active we are at the current moment, if we are advertising for a certain position, we would get more applications also, not for that position, but in general. Yeah, every moment we are a bit louder in the market, then we would get more of those applications and solicited ones as well. Then we might get around, I don't know, 10 applications a day or CVs. Around the times when students are searching for their internships somewhere in the spring, again, we would be getting more inquiries. But in general, if there are no any peaks outside in terms of our publicity, then it would be, you know, 5, something around that a day.
Wow. It's a rather considerable amount if I calculate on a monthly basis, so you have a kind of a rather long queue waiting in the waiting list.
Yeah, we could say so. Well, the other thing is that not all of those applications we can use, unfortunately, because there would be people whose profile, unfortunately, is not fitting what we would be ever looking for. And then also we would look at this pool of applications as a valid ones, maybe for half a year and no longer, because then the situation changes so fast nowadays that it's not really relevant. After half a year, people are already in different places and doing something else.
Absolutely. I understood that you are studying HR and gamification. Am I right?
That's true. That's something I do for my doctoral thesis. And my interest into that direction has been provoked by the understanding that it is actually proven that the game environment is probably the most engaging one, and perhaps the most engaging in comparison to all the possible other settings. And if we could replicate a similar environment at workplace, I think we have great chances to be far more productive. And there has been researchers out there that prove that gaming or game elements can be something that can be used also for as a painkillers for patients in certain situations. So doctors have been experimenting with this even into that direction. So can you imagine? Yeah, so there is very, very huge potential for companies, I believe, how to use gamification also in their people processes and specifically in recruitment, in selection, in internal communication, in business decision making, in many, many, many more.
Can you give me one example about the gamification, for instance, in recruitment? Anything that comes to your mind?
But it was already a couple of years ago, we had a very interesting online game developed for recruiting our cabin crew at Air Baltic. So the message was out there for young people to come and try that game and then test whether they would be suitable for a cabin crew job. And then if they are recognized as suitable, they might apply if they are interested. So basically what the game would do, it would be available to access on Facebook, on the Latvian local portal, this Draugiem.lv or Friends. Friends.com, and I think it was on a few other networks as well posted. So when you logged into the game had a number of questions that would rely to different type of situations that our cabin crew people would experience in their daily job. And based on these situations, there would be few questions which they should answer. And there would be, some of them would be funny ones, some of them would be real ones. And the game would be using people profiles from your social network, from your friends, let's say, that would be dropping into those questions and into those situation descriptions, just the names of people you know. And that what made it very funny. And then there was like, yeah, your score is like this and that, and you're welcome to apply for the job, or maybe you have to think and learn a little bit more and try another time and things like that. And we it was extremely successful. We actually received many times more CVs that we would normally get if we just advertise, I don't know, via usual job portals or any other channels that we would be trying to reach the audience. So that was very successful, interesting experience. And then we might be repeating it if we need a larger crowd of applicants again.